Call the meeting to order.
First on the agenda is approval of the agenda. May I have a motion to approve? Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Next, we have the minutes of meeting of September 10th. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Next is meeting minutes of September 10th. Are there any additions or changes to the minutes? Okay, that was information on there. Next on the agenda is public comment. Is there anybody here who'd like to speak on anything that's not on the agenda? Go ahead. Say your name, please.
Sure. Good afternoon, committee members, director. My name is Monica Figgis. I'm here from Riverside County's Economic Development Agency. And so I noticed on the informational report related to the request for funding or allowance.
Excuse me, can you speak up just a little bit so everybody understands? Thank you.
Sure, I apologize. Thank you. So my comments are related to the information only part of the report and related to the LOIs that have been reviewed. Last month, our nonprofit arm of the Housing Authority submitted a request for funding to fund mobile homes for families that are living in the Oasis Mobile Home Park in Thermal. The families in this mobile home park are experiencing health conditions, health issues, physical and mental, due to high arsenic in the water, being harassed by the park owner. And that mobile home park is on a Latina, Torres Martinez tribal land. And I wanted, first and foremost, to thank the committee for even reviewing our application. But in the comments, our application is not going to stage two, and I respectfully wanted to just provide additional comments related to the notes, the staffing notes. So one of the items says that the nonprofit could apply for AB 2056 funding from the state, and that normally we would apply to those funding sources, but that specific funding source does not apply to tribal land. So although those funds are available for acquisition and rehabilitation of a park, and subsequently rehabilitation for mobile homes for residents of the park, that does not apply to tribal land. So we wouldn't be able to apply for those types of funding. And secondly, we noticed under the financial comments, there is a loss, but it's a paper loss due to the multifamily housing units that the Housing Authority owns. But I would also state that the nonprofit is fully backed by the Housing Authority and the county. So those are just comments that we wanted to include. Again, we respectfully appreciate everyone's time in considering our application. I just wanted to stress that every day these families are there, they're experiencing these health issues, mental health issues.
Thank you. Comments. I'm sure staff will take that into consideration, and I know that we're all very concerned about that mobile home. We first had a discussion for the last 4 years about the profits there. And I know our CEO in Armada, have you been there? Did everything you went and visited?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so we're acutely aware of what's going on.
Thank you.
Are there any other public comments? Hearing none, let's go to old business. If you go to page 9 of the page 7 to 9, you will see the progress and final report update. Are there any questions about that?
So we brought the discussion to the strategic plan committee And we had a very robust conversation about what would be the first steps that we would take in advancing a community health needs assessment. So in the first phase, we're trying to understand what data is available and connecting the dots so that we're not inventing the wheel. And I have implemented an intensive outreach plan to meet with a number of organizations. We had a very good conversation with Riverside County and Department of Public Health, which is also in the planning phase of doing their health assessment. So we want to understand whether there is some synergies there. We know that they don't collect data that is specific to the Coachella Valley, but we want to explore whether there is an opportunity to partner and do some data that is specific to Coachella Valley that would allow us to compare the health status of the population of the valley with the rest of the county and then with the rest of the state. So that's where we are.
I know that there was some concern about meeting your timeline.
Well, I think that the timeline has been some self-inflicted wound that I have done. If the board is flexible with the timeline, I believe that the more time we give to complete that task, the better the quality of the study will be and the better informed our strategic plan will be.
Great, thank you. Are there any other questions from the committee about our strategic plan? Or needs assessment, I'm sorry. Okay, next on the agenda is grant proposals, the letters of interest and pending applications, page 10 to 15. Donna, did you want to go over those?
They've been updated with the LOIs that have come in. It's in red, it's been updated. If there's any particular questions,
Speak up louder, please.
Yes. I'm saying if there's any questions on any particular item that you would like questions on, you'd be more than happy to answer them.
On the Coachella Parks and Recreation Foundation, their request, do you have, I guess at the site visit, that would be really interesting to find out if these different facilities and outdoor facilities are actually being used and how often and how useful they are?
Well, it's contingent on them receiving funding from Proposition 68. They will be creating a new park in Coachella and renovating and expanding an already existing park.
A new park.
So we did request a site visit. We're working with Selena, so if anybody wants to join us, I'll send the date out.
That would be great.
Okay.
Any other discussion? Anybody else have anything they want to bring up? Okay. Let's go to consideration to approve RAV 1023, Coachella Valley Rescue Mission.
And this is a grant from Coachella Valley Rescue Mission asking for funding mainly to purchase three vans. Their vans are basically falling apart. These vans are necessary to transport a lot of seniors as well as the homeless hospital discharge patients to their existing appointments or follow-up appointments with their doctors and physicians. They have not received, or I should say, SACS hasn't come in yet, which is going to be monitoring, operating our clinic on site. But it was clarified to me that they're mostly be doing intake and be doing follow-up appointments with doctors and things like that. So, and then they need the extra staff to be able to escort them. Sure that they're coming safely to their appointments. So Darla's here, and
and so is Kimberly.
Kimberly, great.
So we do use bus passes in some line often, if they're able. The seniors that we have been so heavily, we've been so heavily impacted with seniors becoming homeless in the last 2 years that they're not able to make it to the buses. Things with disabilities and illnesses, so they really need to be shuttled.
The SAC healthcare system, I know that I'm in there. It's Lombardino, right?
Yes.
Lombardino.
Okay, I visited one of their facilities years ago, so I'm pleased that you have been able to develop a relationship with them, and they're going to come and take over. I guess I'm just kind of concerned about what happened with the previous organization, and that it was just probably organizational issues, not with the
I got a call just suddenly one day, literally. I don't have the date in my head, but I have the date that they were just literally going to shut down that day. And health to hope, yes. So I was in a meeting at the time when I got back to my office. I know that you can't do that and leave all these clients that were being treated, 300, you know, and then some outside clients as well. So they eased out and kept someone there through August. But they just said it was an organizational and structural issue. But they do have a large grant that they had to turn over to another, you know, nonprofit facility or something. So there was basically a couple of choices that we had to go with, and Health to Hope strongly suggested that we go with SAC Health. So they're going to be utilizing that grant and carrying over the grant responsibilities that they had. But Health to Hope just cited organizational and structural issues.
If there is sufficient funding with the grant or other being able to bill for the services, there is, that part of it is sound.
It is.
There's financial incentives there to provide.
I think it's the HRSA grant they took over.
It's the HRSA grant they took over, yes. And they were currently waiting. The only wait, it's been extremely long. It's an FQHC facility, the medical portion of it. And the behavioral health is a separate office that we lease to them, and they're waiting on their QHC certification. Should be November 1st, is what I was told yesterday. So, and they, so we're currently using the SAC Pediatric, Loma Linda Pediatric Center in Indio. That is where our people are getting TB and all the HEP certifications and injections that they need before they can come into the program. And behavioral health as well.
If you're going to be using the multi-purpose room for the additional beds, is it that you're going to just put them away in the morning, or are they going to, are you going to have them permanently there?
We do put them away. Okay. They are literally put away and everything's cleaned at 6 o'clock in the morning.
They're stacked up, right?
They're stacked.
And they're put against the wall.
Yeah, they're scrubbed every day.
So you have that much of a need, really, to have that many people coming?
Yes, and we did get some hospital beds from Eisenhower Hospital to use for the very severe. Yes, we've had people with the hospital release program with no legs. People that were really working with all the hospitals closely in our intake packet for them, what they have, you know, because we're not a medical facility, so we've got to be able to treat these people, and they have to be able to care for themselves. So it is quite the journey. You know, we've learned together. We've received people that have gunshot wounds and are missing a limb with a colostomy bag, you know, and things that are above our scope. So and it, we have a system now in place that's working very well, but I would love to see a RN at least or two in our site. We could do more, but we do have, we had 103 in the multi-purpose room last night, people, and 84 in the annex shelter.
I'm curious about the partnership with Zach. How did it come about when we have another 3 federally qualified health centers in Coachella Valley?
Well, we partner with Borrego Health, and we have really enjoyed that partnership, and they've been stepping in and doing some things for us because we just began the SAC partnership. But it came about strongly with the board of Health to Health, Health to Hope, and the board of the Coachella Valley Rescue Mission making that decision. And that's all I can tell you. I wasn't involved in the decision, but and it was anticipated that it would open in September or August 1st, and then September announcement held off till November. So it was a decision made between my board of directors and Health to Hope.
When you mentioned the nurse, that you would really like to have a nurse, but for whatever reason, is it financial?
Well, we're not really equipped for that. I would definitely want a different site to, you know, we also lease homes in the community just for transitional living for people that can't afford their rents, and we have 11, they're all full and they're doing great, and they just pay the rents in the room and share the household expenses. But I envision it like a one-story, three-bedroom house with they need some, is the word I'm looking for that's a medical term. They need some care, you know, some aftercare with the insurance the way it is. It's get your medical, you know, your emergency things treated, and then you're out the door. So we've seen some really very difficult situations with the homeless population and a lot of seniors that are kind of released, you know, as soon as they're fairly stable, but they're really not. So if they're really in not good shape, we have sent them back. We have other hospitals, not just our local hospitals, are doing really well with listening, and we've met with them. We've had our teams go meet with social workers on what we can provide. If they're ready to get right back up and moving, that's a great thing. But there's a whole other population that needs to be housed, but housed in a nursing home setting, and all the hospitals from Higher Riverside are sending people here too. Riverside General, Moreno Valley, some Kaiser Behavioral Health Hospital, and they typically, and this sounds like I'm making it up, but it happens on like Friday night at 6 o'clock, you know, when everybody's already gone. And so we have had, and they Uber them down with nothing, with no medication, nothing. So we have had some real challenges with the hospitals that we don't. So we have had to have drivers and another person for safety drive them back and redeposit them at the hospital if they exceed our care level.
Do you track which other hospitals they're coming from?
We try to if they know. And a lot of times, I had a lady that I was there, and I walked out the door, and she was dropped off on the corner, and I said, "Who brought you here?" And she said, they got me a man to drive me, you know, but she was really confused. We try.
May I just interject? What happens is we have a relationship with the hospitals, so they have to have a plan before they release the referrals. And they refer them to us. So our team, our intake team, works with the hospital to make sure that they are homeless. We vet them, make sure they're on any watch lists or anything. And then that process takes about an hour between the hospital and our intake group. Just in the month of September, we had 12 referrals, and 8 of them showed up. So you just need to know that the hospitals will put them in a van, and if they're homeless and they don't want to go, they don't go. But once they get to us, then we have to, it's usually special accommodations. I mean, the bed has to be special a lot of times until they're more stabilized. They come with no clothes. We're able to give them a shower and clothes and shoes. and at least get him as the case management or how they think. So
and like I said, the hospitals local have done really well. We have an application. We all have it on our computer, right? You know, just to shoot over. Everybody has copies of things that we have to have. You know, they have to be able to self toilet, to self feed, you know, and things like that. But the other hospitals who they also have been sent that application aren't following it. There is nowhere to go. So. You know, my heart goes out to the social workers as well because they don't know what to do with these people. But I just have a vision of like a 3-bedroom, you know, 2 twins in each or 2 hospital beds in each room at least with some round-the-clock care for at least a respite center. And then until we can get them housed, we have a housing department, especially if they're a senior, that can work well. We have 1 senior house that we oversee. We just rented it to be able to put 4 senior men in. And, you know, they do well. They kind of are doing stuff, but they do well, and they can afford the rent. But there needs to be a facility in this valley somehow, somewhere with some respite services. You know, and they can do some things on their own, but they need, medication dispensed, and some have IVs that they need to do, and follow up care.
But isn't that long-term care issues that the hospitals need to send people to a nursing facility so that you're not a substitute for a nursing facility?
Right, but it's space. It's a space issue, Carol. You know what I mean? There's just no space and funding. So they come to us with no money or no income. They want us to get them hooked up on Social Security or whatever, which is months. You know, I mean, if you're lucky, you get approved, you know, in 3 months, 4 months. But, you know, we have some people to push it through very heavily. And with the local congressman and you know, supervisor, we use everything we can do to get those pushed through. But there's no one wants to take them with no income and walk them through that process that they've never. We have seniors that have never even applied for their Social Security.
Part of that $10 million, if the city of Palm Springs gets that, I think part of the plan is to see if some of those monies can be used for recuperative care.
Right. That's what we're
resume for. Yeah, well, they also received the grant for 25 friendly faces, and as far as I know, there's nothing being done here. Those funds aren't being used.
So you mentioned that you have a relationship with local hospitals. Is there also a financial relationship there, or do they?
No.
So
it's just a relationship with our case managers. We try to do 10 things in 10 days, and I don't think the general public understands that if you're homeless, you probably don't have a purse, you probably don't have a wallet, you probably don't have any money, you don't have any ID. You're coming with just, maybe you remember your Social Security, maybe you remember your whole name. It's a lot of work to try to build that profile and get those documents so that they can get care. And we call it case management, but there's so many things that go into that case manager. And the hospitals don't have the time and the staff to do that. And there are very few facilities, to be truthful, here in the whole valley that are equipped to be able to do the case management. You have to house them, because if you just say, come back for your appointment tomorrow, they're not going to come back. So if they're in a safe, secure place, those case management items can be worked on, and with the ultimate goal of getting them working or getting them into the housing. But there's just no way anybody's going to touch you. You can't get into housing without ID. You know, and most homeless do not have those documents.
Yeah, not one document. The hospital release people, they've lost it. Lost it in their campsite, or you know, the neighbor stole it and used it for a fake ID.
Yes,
I mean, the stories are you know, can go on and on, but basically we take them from the start, you know, and we've taken some that we shouldn't because, you know, they're grateful to have a shower, a place to stay, and a bed, but they don't have ID. First we get their social, because you can get a social, you know, just if you remember it, and then we get them at least a California ID, and some have some dementia is going on, so they don't recall. But and then we get them IEHP because they haven't got that yet. And then, you know, we try to get, you know, the 10 documents in 10 days that you need to move forward with your life wherever you go. So, you know, it's we're not dealing with people that are really all the way there at the moment. You know, they're hungry, they're thirsty, they've been medicated and in pain, yeah, and especially when they don't, you know, now we have a thing, you have to give them 30 days of medication if you're going to send them here at least, because it takes that long to get in to see someone and to sign up for their, you know, the benefits that they can get. But we have to literally handhold them, you know, to get these things accomplished.
How do you handle the people who aren't coherent? I'm thinking of free clinic last Friday, and there are people that you can't talk to.
Right. Well, we try to give them 24 hours and get them fed and showered and the basic things, you know, fit, you know, cleaned up. And I mean, they come with no shoes. I had the police department call me at home last night or on my cell phone and say, I have a woman walking around burning her feet, and I don't think she was burning her feet, but I have seen her walking around. She refuses shoes. We've given her so many pairs of shoes, and I don't know where they go. So someone like her, she was a drop-off. And she doesn't stay. She does come to sleep, but she won't wear shoes. So we do the best we can and take her to get the documents and things. But it's mental illness. It's that trying, you know, addiction, mental illness, homelessness. It's a circle. It's a circle. And you know, because you deal with homeless a lot. So it's a circle and a cycle, but we have a really good team of people that works late and doesn't leave somebody's side until, but, you know, we're staffed 1-to-20 ratio pretty much, and that's on a good day. But, you know, this group has been a challenge, and never have I seen so many seniors without homes that they're getting priced out of their homes. Mm-hmm. Their rent's going up $150, $200, and their Social Security is the same. And they're even, you know, it just doesn't pan out. And because there's a line of people waiting to come in and pay the full rent, they just wait till the last day, till they're locked out.
Do you work with some of the other organizations like JFS that help with rent?
Yes. But they'll help for a short period, you know, maybe a month or two, but not long. And by the time we get them, they're locked out. Their possessions are gone, their ID is gone, and all of that. So, but we do work with in placing them. And we have a housing department that does pretty good at placing seniors. We need an apartment house 30% income controlled, like a huge one. Like Blythe. Kimberly's going to Blythe next week, but to see those clients that we place there, it's a great place if it had some infrastructure.
I have two more things.
Go ahead.
But I want two things. One is, on your budget, you have number 4 wrapping for the friendly labels, but it's 0 in there. Are you planning on wrapping them, or no?
We want to wrap them. Good advertisement for the mission. We don't have to wrap them. We can do signage, you know, the magnetic sign. We don't have to wrap them. We like to. We thought we'd just, you know, request that. It's a little bit of a respect thing when we're going to medical centers and things. And a lot of them have the disability access, but we don't have to wrap them.
So if you don't do the wrapping, you'll just do the
magnetic signage.
But we won't get acknowledgement for the district on that.
But
well, we could. If you wanted that.
If so you want that, and we'd love to have that partnership notified. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We would be happy. We would love to wrap them.
Mm-hmm. I just think it's important to...
Uh-huh. Or you'll definitely be included in whatever method you choose. The wrapping we want to do as a healthcare district on the back, because that's where people really see you when they're stopped behind you.
Mm-hmm. And so, the other thing I...
To your point, I think we should include a clause in the contract when we award a grant that it includes how the district should be acknowledged.
Actually,
sure.
Exhibit A, after accretion policy. Mm-hmm. So it's required.
The other thing is, I would like to explore the idea of getting a van to move it so we can talk afterwards.
So we can what?
Talk later about getting a van for Hawaii.
Okay.
That's outside of the district, but we could talk about
it.
Can I just share one more statistic? So seniors are becoming more and more homeless, and we're seeing them more of them in our shelter. So there are homeless by that time. They have no resources by the time they come back. The numbers are increasing, and I don't have all my statistics in front of me, but just in the month of September, and we had the three cooling centers, this is just the month of September unduplicated at our mission, 204 seniors, 55 or older, are staying there. So when you look at our multi-purpose room or the cooling room during the day while they're watching TV, it's just a sea of elderly. You know, and I'm really afraid that that's going to just keep increasing.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so we really need to start being proactive right now.
Well, the majority of the cooling centers were
seniors.
Well.
Yeah.
And are those all patients from the Valley, or are those also patients from that are being shipped from somewhere else?
Well, not just patients, but they're homeless people that have become homeless in the last year. Like, they were homed, and due to rental increases, living with a family member that suddenly lost their home, and the senior gets booted out. We've seen such an increase that we're very concerned about the future. But again, I see great seniors that do well when they're cared for, and we've had we keep them for up to 6 months. We don't throw anybody out on the street, but we really try to get them housed, and they do well together. Like, if you can get an apartment with two, they kind of keep an eye on each other, and they'll call and tell us what the other one's doing. So-and-so's drinking or whatever, but it really does work out if they have an apartment house to go to. It's just, they have to be on a bus line. If they normally, none of ours have a car. I mean, none of the people we're getting have a car. So it's an economic thing, and it's a really tough sell to landlords. The landlord thing, because we'll pay the first 3 months with the grants that we have, and then they have to pay the rest. And we work with them all through those months with case management to save what you're going to have to pay, because it doesn't just, you know, and happily, even though we're in life, with the last five, the five that we placed, they, you know, I went there a couple times too, but Kimberly's going next week, but they saved, and we put it aside, put it in an envelope, showed them how to save, because they want to do things, they want to spend money, and they want to, you know, do things as well. But it's working. All of them are successful, and that's great, with case management and a proper location. And we partnered them up, and they don't need their own apartment. They actually do better with somebody to hang out with or look after.
But are they all from the Valley?
Yes.
Or are they,
yes,
people that are getting shipped out?
No, they're all from the Valley. I mean, well, I can't say that. I'm sure in our mix right now there's some that are getting shipped out. But that number is, I don't know, something's going to have to be done pretty soon with all the hospitals. We're, RU Behavioral Health. What is that?
It's really,
yeah, okay, so that is a challenge. Yeah, because they're sending people that really we can't care for. And it's really awful for the people to get out of the car in a wheelchair, with a hospital gown on only, and say, sorry, we can't take care of you here. We end up with them for a few days at least, but.
Don't hospitals, the new law requires them to give them clothing?
We have an agreement with them. For the people that come to us, we will give them get them a shower and clothing and toiletries and shoes.
Okay. Other questions? Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, I have a few questions based on the documentation. One of which is, why is there so much duplication? It's like cut and paste. but there are a lot of paragraphs which are redundant. But other than that, I'm not sure that I understand the whole van situation, because on one hand, I read that the vans are needed for this transition period that you're going through.
Right.
But then it talks about the need for, you know, current technology vans, if I can use that term. So I'm not sure which is the motivating thing. Is it a temporary need because of your transition, or is it an ongoing need?
It's an ongoing need.
Yeah.
But that because of this transition into seniors, we're finding that we're doing a lot more not handing out bus passes like we do to the clients that are capable, like everybody in this room could probably use a bus pass. But our senior citizens that are affected medically cannot get around, and they can't find places, and they can't use a bus pass, and they need a person to go with them to get them checked in, to get them taken home, taken back to the mission. So it's really universal. Also, our vehicles are so utilized every day that they last about 4 years, but then we're seeing $6,000 repairs on our buses and things. It becomes, take it out of service. The charges are so we constantly are riding for any new vehicles, but it's going to be a grand help for the senior citizens, for the pregnant women we have that we after a certain month of pregnancy, we don't let them walk to the hospital. Or so it's really a universal need, but we asked for an extra vehicle for the senior citizen to try to loop them in together and send two case managers perhaps with six seniors for appointments.
Okay, then another question. You make reference to the HMIS tracking system. I'm new to this whole area, so I guess my question there is this a common application that's used by multi-agencies? And if so, is there data sharing among the agencies so you're really getting a picture of who the homeless people are that you're serving?
There is. HMIS is a tracking system that we use by Riverside County, who funds us, and there is a sharing of data for repeat individuals or people that are, you know, overusing the services. Mm-hmm.
It's also required by HUD, okay. So all homeless shelters that do intake, it's required by HUD, funding and, for HUD.
And is there sharing? This is an informational question.
Yes, there's a lot of sharing that goes back and forth.
Thank you.
And it's published.
Good afternoon. My question is directed to staff in reference to this this organization. First of all, the Coachella Valley Rescue Mission to me is a well-established organization in the community. It's been around for a while. I remember when it was existing in the little corner lot store opposite of where it exists now. And I think that building's leveled off now. You guys have grown tremendously. And with that, you have to increase your budgets and services. I'm not really too concerned about the services because I think they're good. You guys provide very good service. I'm more at a loss when I read the information that the Coachella Valley Rescue Mission had been a recipient of many grants since 2009 up to 2017, they were, requested $100,000, they were granted it, nothing in 2018, now 2019, they're doubling the $100,000. But prior to that, I had noticed there were mini grants. Am I reading this right?
Yes, and they were able to apply for mini grants because they approved that they were serving percentage of district residents at that time when we had the boundaries that stopped at Cook Street. So they were able to show that they were serving a percentage of district residents, homeless district residents at the addresses here on this side of Cook Street. And the mini grants are $5,000 or less, like either like
right.
a machine or for some medical supplies and things like that. Now that the family has been expanded, they're still showing that a big majority of consumers are coming from even the original boundaries. So, but because we have expanded our boundaries now.
Okay. Now, as a procedure, policy, and all that stands today, they can apply for whatever amount given the services that they're offering, correct? So you're offering increased beds, you're offering increased transportation, three vans, something like that. $216,000 is very steep for me. Why do we not consider staff? This question is to staff, not the provider. Do we not consider that from a mini grant to a major colossal grant, how was the provider funded prior to provide these services?
From other grants, from other donors, they have a large donor base.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you very well.
They have private funders as well, individual donors. They have fundraising events. They have other earned income that comes in. So,
very good. Okay. So the staff does evaluate that. Very good.
Yes, and our CFO evaluates all the audited financials as well.
Okay. Now to the provider. Since you're requesting this amount of $2,016,000, do you not have that support monetary-wise anymore to increase the services?
Our services have increased to that level. So I'm asking the Desert Healthcare District for that, since we did get the door open when they became part of the East Valley as well in the last 2 years. But we are hopeful that Desert Healthcare District, it's a fairly new partnership in this amount, but we're hopeful because we serve a lot of people on both sides of the valley, and our services have increased greatly and continue to increase daily. So do I have that amount already somewhere or put aside? Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
Well, we always have a little bit of money in our savings account, and we do have some other stocks and things like that, but it's going to create a hardship. I want to add staff to the senior citizens, so that's one of our big needs. I want to add some clean working vehicles that don't break down with people in them all day. And I'm just hopeful that Desert Healthcare, it seems like a perfect fit to partner with Rescue Mission.
One of the other reasons is we had a West Valley homeless shelter that closed. And in response, our district board created this initiative to help support the other existing shelters that were taking the load of those other homeless individuals that were utilizing the shelter on the west side.
Okay.
So this is why there's an increase in services, an increase in need.
Thank you. Last question. So are you, the provider, are you folks contemplating on coordinating with other agencies, possible funding agencies? Maybe you answered that earlier.
We do every day.
Like, for example, did you guys submit this application to Riverside County? Did you submit the application to the RAP agency, other foundations in the valley?
Not this application, no.
Say that again?
This application was directly submitted to Desert Healthcare District. But we do submit applications to all other funding agencies, Riverside County, the cities, all the local 13 cities, for ongoing support. Our budget is going up every year, our annual budget, and we have to fulfill those needs and requests. But with the need being that I need to add four staff, to accommodate the people that need rides and transport and extra care, case management, not getting into sustainable housing, I submitted this grant to Desert Healthcare District only. You have to streamline your grants for whatever your funder will provide. And we're limited with the cities, we're limited with Riverside County, what they will allow or what they will provide. And I have private donations as well, but you know, they're not to this level of accommodation that is so needed. We also opened 3 cooling centers in the West Valley for the summer for 3 months. Those were shut down at the end of September, and then the City of Palm Springs came back and asked us to keep theirs open, and they would pay for it directly. So, they're funding their own cooling center, their own service center is what it will turn into, but they're very limited in their funding amounts. They won't fund vehicles or anything like that. We do that through CDBG funds and different funding through RAP, but this specific request was written for Desert Healthcare District.
The question really I have is 2 things. You all do amazing work, I think, but one thing that I noticed is the request for the grant is $216,000, and then when you look at the labor cost, it's $122,850, which is a very large percentage of the grant. And so my question is, after the first year, because this is for 1 year for salary, what happens to year 2? And is this grant really like a salary? You know, a large portion is for salary.
Right.
And I was wondering if perhaps you could put in perspective what the $122,850 is compared to the organizational budget for salary.
Well, this would be to provide $15 an hour case managers that are trained to work with seniors or medically involved people. And with that comes workers' comp, payroll taxes, all of those things. So the package literally works out to that amount. Hiring and staffing is not free or cheap, it just isn't. And that's what that works out to be for 4 staff.
So what happens year 2?
Then we scramble. As soon as, if this grant gets accepted and we get these funds, then we scramble to work on year 2. I have a team of myself, Kimberly, and 1 other person that works on grant funding and funding sources. And we always seem to do what we need to do to get it. Depends on our statistics. Everyone's interested in the statistics, and the statistics from when we get someone and when we house them is strong. So it's what has to be done to house somebody that right. has nothing in their pocket, or you know, no money, no ID, nothing. And
so where would the $122,000, what percentage of that is salary for the organization? Is it like 3%, 5%?
2% have been.
No, I'm talking about like it take the $122,850. Mm-hmm. Is that like 5%, 10% of the salaries for the organization, or is
probably
it
about 5%?
Okay.
Yeah, we don't have that many staff. We have a lot of volunteers, and I try to get volunteer drivers, but it's a lot insurance-wise to insure volunteers to take people at certain times to certain places that are impacted with certain disabilities. We work with Desert AIDS. We work with, you know, people with Hep A, B, and C, and a lot of different agencies that they need to go to get their medication, or, you know, we just work with everybody. So it's a lot to get people cleaned up and ready to go into housing.
Do you also work with IEHP on the transportation?
Yeah, we do. We do with IEHP. We try to find some transportation with IEHP.
What type of transportation have they been able to apply for your, I mean, provide for your patients?
It depends on who it is and what their disabilities are. It's been a little bit difficult for us to get them to come through with transportation, frankly.
One more question?
I have one question. I may have a follow-up question depending on the answer.
Uh-huh.
So the first is for staff and process. There are 2 grant scoring reviews done by staff. So are they, can they be discussed in this meeting?
Sure. They're in the proposal, correct?
Mm-hmm. Okay, then a follow-up question I have then is both scorers rank organizational sustainability lower than all the other ratings, which raises some concern in my mind. So I'm wondering if the staff can address that, and what role does the health district have in helping to address something like organizational sustainability?
This particular organizational sustainability relates to having a business plan or a strategic plan, and they do not have a current strategic plan in place right now, but their board is working on a strategic plan retreat to get a strategic plan. So specific to having a strategic plan, this is why they got a low score on that. It has nothing to do whether or not they're financially capable or financially sustainable. It's more, we ask that we require that there's a strategic plan, and they are in the process of updating their strategic plan.
Okay, thank you very much.
That helps. 2013 is our last.
And that'll be done by the end of the year.
Are there any other questions? Darla and CBRM? Could I have a motion?
A motion.
Second.
Motion? Motion to approve?
Second.
Or a second?
Second.
Okay. A second.
All right. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed?
For discussion.
Motion carried. Thank you. Oh,
yes.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Thank you. Thank you, Donna.
I'm sorry.
No.
Oh, you said no? Oh. Okay.
One
no.
What mean the law?
Great. On to the next. Have you been to the mission?
Yes, I have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I know you guys receive county monies, so I would go do the
grab a sandwich.
Jay said, grab some wine. Oh, there's wine.
Thank you. No, we still have the
budget shape.
Okay, but this part committee member comments.
I have a question, I guess, relating to salaries. Like in general, what is the Desert Healthcare's board view of salaries, and at what level does that become a factor, I guess?
All salary requests are vetted very, very carefully, and it's not just whimsy, it's how it relates to the project, cost of doing business, operating, and a lot of funders do not use the funds for operating costs.
That's really the question.
And so our board always is very generous in that respect for as doing business for operating, so we can continue to service that they are doing. So the board doesn't have a set percentage of what we would or would not give to our salaries. So it's a case by case.
Right. Are there any other director comments? I have some things to share with you. This is July 2017 Community Behavioral Health Needs Assessment that the district is working on, just for your information to look at. And then the other thing is that Bob shared with me is a list of grants that have been awarded for the past 5 years. People will want to know maybe what some of our history is, and we'll make sure you get that link so you can see the names of grantees that we have funded in the past. We'll adjourn and move on to the foundation. Program Committee Foundation meeting for this. I'll call that to order. May I have approval of the agenda? May I have a motion to approve the agenda?
Motion to approve the agenda.
Second?
Second?
I'll second.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we had a second, so I'm sorry.
It's all right. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? More public comments? Any more public comments? We have new business, page 227 of your packet, funding announcement.
Okay, so including in your foundation packet is an overview of a funding announcement that we want to discuss. So I'm just going to kind of present a little background to how we got to that and then kind of walk through it a little bit and hopefully answer any questions, and then we can open it up for discussion after that. So just a little background: in February 2018, at the board meeting, there was several options that were reviewed for Eastern Coachella Valley funding. And ultimately, after a lot of comments from the public, stakeholders, and the board of directors, they chose one of the options, which was to allocate $300,000 per year for 20 years to the Eastern Coachella Valley Unrestricted Funds. That equals about $6 million. And then in November 2018, the Eastern Coachella Valley residents voted and the expansion was approved. So the district has the boundaries from Desert Hot Springs all the way to the North Shore. And in order to start kind of understanding the needs and how those funds may be allocated, we conducted listening forums, which I haven't discussed before, but I just wanted to provide a little highlight to refresh your memory. From February to April 2019, there were six community listening forums that were conducted in the newly annexed boundaries of the district in Mecca, North Shore, India, La Quinta, and Palm Desert in the Sun City community, and then Coachella. And staff engaged in resident-driven conversations around their three community focus areas of homelessness, healthy eating, active living, and then access to behavioral health and primary care. And the goal was, once again, to just really start to understand what the priorities and needs of Eastern Coachella Valley residents were. And the key takeaway after these listening forums was that there was a high need for service and education to improve access to primary care and behavioral health. So current funds for Eastern Coachella Valley, in the fiscal year 2018-19, we had $300,000 that were allocated, and then again in the 2019-2020, there's an additional $300,000 allocated for Eastern Coachella Valley. And to date, only $75,000 of that has been allocated, and that was to the Galilee Center in Mecca. So that leaves us with $525,000 that's still need to be allocated. So in order to kind of expedite the process in getting those funds to organizations serving the Eastern Coachella Valley residents, staff created a funding announcement to create a simple, transparent, fair process for organizations that serve these residents to access foundation funding. This funding announcement is a direct response to the community listening forums and what we heard there, so this will be focusing on the health needs of the Eastern Coachella Valley, specifically behavioral health and primary care. So the purpose, is to reiterate, is to distribute that $525,000 to expedite the process, to get it out to these organizations and let experts be experts and continue doing the work that they do. We're proposing it to be follow our current policy that has already been approved and in place, our current grant structure. We're going to have grants not to exceed $50,000 and then have any grants available for $5,000 or less. The focus is going to be proposing to do core operating supports, once again, let those experts who know the area of the experts, with the ultimate goal of strengthening the capacity of these organizations to effectively and efficiently respond to the challenges and barriers faced by communities, and then to help support long-term growth and development to better fulfill their mission. Just a little overview of the timeline. We are proposing that letters of interest be accepted on a rolling basis until funds are expended or the board of directors decides to close this funding opportunity. And it will be a two-step application process, once again, already following the grant structure that is in place, a letter of interest, and then a full grant application with any additional documents. To look at a little bit of the eligibility, the organization is exempt from federal taxation under the 501c3. Audited financials will be required when they submit their LOI for grants that are over $5,000. Applicants must directly serve residents east of Cook Street in Palm Desert, and they must work to address access to care, looking at accessibility, affordability, availability, or acceptability of healthcare services and education. Once again, being a direct response to the listening funds that were conducted. We are going to give preference to applicants that are physically located in the newly annexed area of the district. preference, the true preference will be given to organizations that have not previously received funding from the Desert Healthcare District and Foundation. And then lastly, we are going to give preference to organizations that can demonstrate and qualify how the district funds can be leveraged. And just to provide a little bit of an overview of our current grant process, for grants over $5,000, it's a four-step process. The first step is submitting the LOI, which for grants over $5,000 will need to be audited financially, will be included. And then pre-qualified district staff will contact the applicant for a proposal conference and possible site visit. And then if all three qualifications are met, the step two will be staff will send out an invitation for them to complete a full application, which they will submit online, and then with any additional documents that may be required. And then the full grant application documents will be reviewed by staff and scored by staff following scoring criteria that's already been approved and is on our website, and then presented to the program committee for recommendation and discussion. And then step four would be bringing that program committee recommendations to the next board meeting following that. And then just looking at the mini grant process, it's a little bit shorter because it's $5,000 or less. They do still submit a letter of interest, and then if pre-qualified, they'll get an invitation to submit a mini grant application, and they're only allowed to apply for one $5,000 request in one fiscal year. And these mini grants are processed by the administration of the district and ultimately approved by the chief executive officer. And again, just reiterate, this is following the grant system that is already in place, so nothing is changing with that. And the grant focus is really heavily on access to care, the accessibility, affordability, availability, and acceptability. That is broad, but all of those transition into access to care for residents in East Valley, ultimately looking to strengthen organizational capacity to report operating support. And just some examples of what that may look like, this is obviously not an inclusive list, just to kind of share some examples that could be expanding services that will deepen the organization's work to support their mission and the community need, exploring new organizational structures and developing greater efficiencies, supporting recruitment or training of staff to diversify the organization's leadership or board to reflect the community need, improving any office functionality, and then some leadership development for our transitions. And the next step after we presented here, we have a conversation and whatever we have, and we hope to bring it to the board of directors in the October board meeting. And if approved there, we're looking to have staff create a webpage that is specific to foundation grants. Obviously, you guys know that we revamped our website, so we want to make a page specific to foundation to help avoid any confusion between district and foundation funding. And then we release this funding opportunity on a rolling timeline to kind of use it as a starting point to get that money allocated to those organizations that would really use it. And then we work with our director of marketing, Will, to help figure out how best to broadcast this so that we just broadcast to organizations that already know us. So look at different avenues for that.
Questions?
I have one question. Will the announcement for the expanded area be independent and no announcement for the original service area, or is there going to be a simultaneous announcement?
I don't understand the question.
Well, like you're announcing for the new service area. Okay.
This funding.
Okay, my question is, what if you're an organization that's on this side of Cook Street? Is there some kind of similar announcement for funding available for this
for
side?
For the west side?
Yes.
This is specific to a fund
that
the board approved for the east and
I understand.
Coachella Valley.
But I'm just saying, if you were wanting to apply for funds and you're this side, can an organization do that? Or is it only for...
They can. We created criteria that says that preference will be given to organizations that reside on the east side. It doesn't preclude an organization that resides on the west Coachella Valley to apply for funds to serve the population on the eastern Coachella Valley.
Okay.
But what we're looking for is to support organizations that are in the eastern Coachella Valley, serving the eastern Coachella Valley residents, and that have not received funds from the district in prior years because they were not eligible.
If I might add, under eligibility, it reads, that applicants must directly serve residents of east of Cook Street in Palm Desert. You may want to revise that to say applicants must directly serve or plan to serve residents east of Cook Street, because one of the reasons this is a health services desert out there is that it is not populated with 501c3 organizations that provide these services to these to this population. I mean, it's like going into hell and saying, why doesn't anybody have an air conditioner? Well, it just doesn't exist there. And that's the part of the conditioning. We don't have those types of organizations, so we may want to put some type of invitational flexibility into it.
So I really appreciate the focus of this proposal of attacking the core competency of the organization and staff and so forth. Several questions come up in my mind. One is it anticipated that there would be resources in the Coachella Valley or even in the east side of the Coachella Valley who can service these organizations that are looking for funding? That's part A. Part B, is it anticipated that there would be commonality in these requests so that an organization can develop programs that address more than one of the applicants? So there are two parts to the question.
I have a hard time understanding the question, because it is not to develop new things, it's to support the work that organizations are already doing.
Right.
So what we're asking, I will give you one example that I have used before. We have Clínica de Salud del Pueblo, which is providing access to healthcare to the population in Eastern Coachella Valley. And these are nonprofit organizations that are struggling for funding because, as you mentioned, why there isn't an air conditioner in hell, because it doesn't exist.
Right.
So these organizations are struggling in the first place because there is not sufficient funding that it's being allocated to the Eastern Coachella Valley. So we want those organizations to find the opportunity to renovate, to support the work that they're doing, to do what they're doing well, to continue doing it even better. But that, I think that is a condition to answering your question. The other is, there are organizations that are in the Eastern Coachella Valley that are already receiving other types of support. Whether they're sufficient or insufficient, that's what we're going to find out. It is the first time that the district is opening its funds in this way to the Eastern Coachella Valley. So it's going to be a significant learning opportunity for us as we are engaging with the nonprofit community there.
Okay, and I support that. I really appreciate that. The question I have is, using the analogy, are there any resources in the Coachella Valley that can provide either the air conditioning or the servicing of the air conditioning? In other words, I guess my question, it's a two-part question, was while we're doing this statement, I believe that you can do more than one thing at a time. So the thing that you can add to that is identifying any resources, and I think I'm not sure what RAP does, but are there resources here in the Coachella Valley that can benefit from having paying customers for the purpose of all of these things?
So if I'm understanding your question better, let's say going back to Clínicas de Salud del Pueblo, because they're a federally qualified health center, they receive subsidies from the federal government per person. They probably receive some subsidies from other foundation sources. By expanding their work, let's say that they decide to expand to have more outreach and they can enroll more people into Medicaid, that brings more resources to their organization. So it enhances their ability to be sustainable. If they add services that will attract, that will meet the need of the community and will attract more members of the community to access their services, that will increase the likelihood of Clínicas de Salud del Pueblo to be sustainable, because every client that walks in the door is going to bring payment from the federal government.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to monopolize this thing, but my concern or question is, are there resources in the Coachella Valley that can help these organizations that we want to fund achieve some progress in these areas that you've outlined, services, organizational structure, and so forth, rather than their having to go out of the district?
I believe there is a significant gap in funding for nonprofit organizations in the Eastern Coachella Valley. And that is the reason why the community, when we asked, what do you think the greatest needs are in your communities, and they said access to care.
Okay.
And that is a result of a gap in funding, a gap in attention by most of the foundations, the large foundations that we have in California. So the only one that we are, well, there are two that we are aware have provided some funding to Eastern Coachella Valley. One is the California Endowment. And the other one is the California Wellness Foundation. However, the California Endowment has focused their resources in addressing structural and policy items that have a very profound effect, but all at the same time, you have organizations that are struggling in their day-to-day sustainability of their mission. While it's wonderful to change policies and addressing those big structural challenges that we face in Eastern Coachella Valley, this organization needs to address their immediate needs, which are short-term.
Yeah, we're not disagreeing about anything. Can anybody else help me?
Unfortunately, when we expanded our boundaries and we got approval from LAFCO to expand the boundaries, and the voters, it was only the voters west of Cook, east of Cook Street that could vote for this. It did not come with a funding stream.
Right.
We asked, we worked with the county to see if we could get the same amount of property tax that we get from the property tax owners on this side. So our board was required to find other alternative sources of funding so that we can now help our new residents, our new clients. So yes, there are other funders. I mean, RAP Foundation is a huge funder for the East Valley.
Okay, I'm not talking about funding right now, because I see a bunch of words.
He said resources.
The organization, strengthen, deepen the organization's work, new organizational structure, recruitment and training practices, improving office functionality, leadership development. These are all they're helping these organizations to get their act together and developing some some technology knowledge, to not only understand what's a good air conditioner, but what kind of support they need. But so let's say we grant them their request. Where does staff anticipate they will go? Not for additional funding, but for the kind of training and resources that these points call for.
I think what we're looking for is maybe a better description of what access means and how these organizations are going to use that.
I believe that the question that Nicholas is asking is about, okay, we give them, let's say that one of the items that they may choose is a succession plan. Where do they find resources to train them to develop that succession plan? I think that probably they will have to identify those resources. I don't know that I know the Eastern Coachella Valley to that degree to tell you exactly who could provide that service. I don't know if that is it's a function of the RAP Foundation. Is that a function of the association, the nonprofit association of Southern California, or another entity that can provide that type of support? So I'm at a loss to answer that question. To that level of specificity, and I think we will learn a lot as we are learning to work with these nonprofit organizations.
Okay.
So, because you're new, I will excuse you for not knowing that much about RAP, but I will make it a point to talk to you before the next meeting to give you more information about what RAP does and how we can possibly provide some input to address this issue, and also what the Rescue Mission said earlier today, that they are in need of a strategic plan. They don't have one. That's what the sidebar conversation was about. How do we get a facilitator? We have access to that. So that's what I want to inform you of between now and the next meeting.
Thank you.
I have a question. Like earlier in the day, she was talking about the mobile home park in Packer. Okay. Now is that... And she's from the county, okay. So would they be eligible to apply for funding under this proposal?
So are they a 501c3, yes or no? Yes, if they are, they can apply. Are they going to provide services to residents in the Eastern Coachella Valley? Yes, they can apply. Do they reside in or outside of the Eastern Coachella Valley? Yes, they can apply.
Okay.
That doesn't automatically grant them the funds because it's a competitive process.
But it's not necessarily that the organizational structure has to physically be in the eastern part of the valley.
Preference will be given to those that reside in Eastern Coachella Valley.
Okay.
It's not only to organizations that reside in Eastern Coachella Valley, but we will give preference to those.
Okay.
Is it specified for 501c3?
Yes.
I'm struggling to figure out the link between access to care and assistance with organizational development. Can you clarify what...
So the link there is if... Going back to the example of Clínica César de Guadalupe, they provide access to care, but they struggle to sustain the infrastructure of the organization. Let's say that they decide to invest our grant dollars into a new software that is going to enhance how they coordinate care within their facilities. So that is how they improve access to care. Do they want to invest in hiring or training promotoras that are going to do outreach and provide education and connect families with the care that they provide in their facility, that's how they will enhance access to care.
Now I understand.
Would you also consider strengthening their facility to enroll more in Medicare, in Medicaid programs?
Absolutely.
I mean, the Medicaid enrollment, I mean, because that is something that essentially opens up the faucet for federal funding. And, you know, in areas like that, we still have eligibility levels that were way below meeting them.
Yes.
And that's a shame on all of us for not making that available, because
absolutely,
that's the gap of people who most
absolutely
need services, and where we've got, you know, 80% of that federally funded, 20% of it state funded.
And it is a significant source of coverage for so many residents in our communities. I think it is important that we talk about that as well.
Mm-hmm. And there are organizations that are currently doing that outreach, but they just haven't been funded by the
right
foundation.
A broader question about the role of the healthcare foundation, healthcare district and foundation. When I worked for the state of New Mexico looking at IT projects, there was always a question that came through from legislature about giving preference to state of New Mexico companies, but the idea of keeping the funding within the state. I guess that was kind of behind a number of my aspects. Do we as a healthcare district have any sense of needing to give preference to organizations that spend their money locally? I guess I just leave it at
that. I think that that is an interesting policy question for a board. What we're trying to do with this funding is to support organizations that do serve residents in our district.
I have another question. Earlier we heard about Coachella Valley Rescue Mission, and then we see the funding that's been provided to Galilee Center. And it's like, clearly the missions have, of those organizations have grown, expanded, new services, you know, lots of different things under the umbrella. Do you envision that this kind of funding could support existing organizations that are well established and maybe rethinking or focusing their missions?
I think we're open to listening to our community and see what the community is coming to say. We expect nonprofit organizations to be responsive to a need. So if the proposal that they bring to us, we find that it's in response to a very specific, very well documented, and well thought out need, I think we need to listen to that. I cannot anticipate what we will be funding because we want to engage the entire nonprofit community. So I'm sure that we will hear needs that we probably don't anticipate.
My question is the amount that has been identified is the maximum amount of $50,000. I'm wondering if there will be a possibility that we could expand, increase that amount to encourage collaboration between two or more organizations. So that way we are addressing an issue and that it's more collaborative, and we're addressing issues already out there that that could possibly bring in other resources as well.
So we do encourage collaboration, and in my experience, many nonprofit organizations sometimes come to the table with similar proposals to do the same thing in the same type, in the same community, same geographic boundaries, and that offers an opportunity for the district to play a leadership role and sit down with those organizations and say, how can we make collaboration happen? Because resources should be used more wisely than duplicating services, absolutely.
So instead of having two organizations applying for, let's say, $25,000, $30,000 each, encouraging them to come in together and then still having that dollar amount of $60,000, but that you are then encouraging them
to partner, yeah.
So I think that's something that we should consider. The other thing is about the issue that was brought up earlier in the grant review. Was about sustainability and whether it's realistic that we can give somebody, an organization, a grant and expect them to be able to have a solution for year two, year three, so forth. So should we, and I have no idea, I'm just throwing it out there for consideration, should we look at the difference between one-time only requests or operations requests?
That's what I'm saying.
I believe we need to look into revising some of the existing policies we have in the district. I am compiling a list of policies that we need to bring to the attention of our finance and administration committee, and then ultimately have a discussion at the board level. But absolutely, thank you.
Okay. So, how is it intended to market this this funding availability, and then follow through with any interest?
So we have a communications department which we will use to broadcast this opportunity through constant contact emails, through social media, through different channels that we have of distribution of information, so that the public is aware of this opportunity.
Would you also be using like the Desert Sun or the communications media to help you in this process?
We did not anticipate that, but I don't see why not.
I think go on the television again.
Without soliciting. AB 2019 can't solicit, so that's putting that opportunity
in
exactly.
Form.
To inform the public. Right. Is there any other discussion, questions?
Just one comment. I think all of the discussion on this showed that we are more about collaborating, and we have a lot more in common than we have in differences, as we tend to support this. A nice presentation.
Yes.
Thank you.
May I have a motion?
I make a motion to recommend approval.
I second.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Great. I guess we're adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you all for attending.
Thank you very much.